The sudden friendship between Germany and Russia is reported to be treated more or less as a joke by the German people, who, it is said, greet each other with the words, Heil Moscow. A correspondent in Munich reports that the travel agencies there are doing good holiday business, and that in general the people are not prepared for an immediate war. Nevertheless, the exodus of foreigners from Germany is proceeding more quickly. Trains travelling westwards from Berlin are packed with people, and the air services to London are said to be booked up until Sunday. It is now claimed in Berlin that there are 20 German divisions on Poland's frontiers. 11 are said to be in East Prussia, and the other main points of concentration are opposite Gdynia and near Breslau. In the west, great activity is also reported, both along the frontiers of Belgium and Luxembourg and further south. German troops are working hard on new fortifications in the Upper Rhineland. Danzig. The German cruiser Schleswig-Holstein entered Danzig harbour this morning. According to German reports, the Danzig Senate has ordered that fuel supplies must be conserved, and consequently private motor traffic in Danzig has come to a standstill. Warsaw. A statement was issued in Warsaw last night about the appointment of Herr Foster as head of the Danzig state. It says that Poland will decide her attitude to this appointement when its real aims are made clear. It adds that Poland would not agree to any Anschluss of Danzig with Germany or to any step which might place Danzig outside the Polish customs frontier. All other Polish rights, it says, must also be preserved without any limitations. On the other hand, it reaffirms that Poland would not raise difficulties in the free cultural development of the German majority, provided Polish minority rights were safeguarded. The Polish government today imposed a ban on the sale of alcohol, including vodka of more than a certain strength. The reason given is that alcohol would be needed for the wounded if war should break out. The mayor of Warsaw today issued an appeal to the population to spend their leisure time helping with the digging of trenches. Paris. Further defense measures have been taken in France, and in Paris this morning, Monsieur Daladier, the Prime Minister, had a long conversation with General Gamelin, Chief of the French Armed Forces. Monsieur Daladier also had an interview with the Minister of Labour. The government have advised those whose presence in Paris is not indispensable to leave, and the railway company has taken steps to facilitate the evacuation. 200 Paris buses have left the capital today in different directions. A decree published today ordered the requisition of French factories and private firms to supply material to all the defense departments. Private vehicles have been requisitioned, and all holidays have been cancelled for workers engaged in national defense. Staff on holiday are being recalled. It is understood that commanding generals are being appointed for the French armies and army groups, and that they will take over their commands at once. Last night, there was a partial blackout of Paris, and many streets were in darkness. Everywhere today, there are signs of precautionary measures being pushed ahead. The population is quite calm and are going about their daily business as usual. The stations are crowded with reservists, people who are already leaving Paris, and British subjects who are returning home on the advice of the British Embassy. German journalists began to leave Paris this morning. Rome. An official communique issued in Rome says that two more classes are being called up as a precautionary measure. This will bring the total number of classes under arms to 6, with some specialists of various classes. The communique adds that naval and air forces have had their effective numbers nearly complete since Wednesday, and that 35 battalions of the militia have been called to the colors. Moscow. The members of the British and French military missions who were to have left Moscow during the night and this morning have postponed their departure. Officials gave no explanation and said that the missions might or might not leave today. It is officially announced that the Soviet Parliament is to hold an extraordinary session on Monday. Tokyo. Japan is reported to be lodging a protest with Germany against the German-Soviet pact. The Dome News Agency says that the cabinet decided on this step this morning and that the Japanese ambassador in Berlin, Mr. Oshima, has been instructed to lodge the protest. The spokesman of the Foreign Office said today in Tokyo that Article 4 of the German-Soviet pact was considered to violate the Anti-Comintern pact. He denied that Japan had been invited to join a non-aggression pact with the Soviet or an alliance against Britain. In reply to a question, he announced that the former war minister, Count Terauchi and Baron Osumi, would not now represent Japan at the Nazi Congress at Nuremberg on September the 2nd. The Secretary of the Japanese Cabinet said today that in view of the new situation arising from the signature of the German-Soviet pact, the government had decided to abandon the formula which they had under preparation defining their policy in relation to Europe. Messages from Hong Kong today say that the families of British Army and Navy men are now going on board the troop ship Ettrick. The United States Consul General in Hong Kong has advised all Americans who can to take their holidays now. It is expected that the United States liner President Cleveland will stay at Hong Kong until it is seen whether it is likely that Americans will be evacuated. The railway engine drivers and firemen have called off the strike, which was to have begun tomorrow, after the Ministry of Labor had appealed to them in the national interest. As a result of shipping restrictions, a number of cruising liners have cancelled their departure. Shipments of coal from South Wales to Germany were suspended yesterday, but business with Italy continued. Ships have been warned of further obstructions which have been made in the Orkneys and elsewhere. The Archbishop of Canterbury today issued an appeal for special prayers for peace in churches all over the country on Sunday. Further defense measures have been taken in France, and in Paris this morning, Monsieur Daladier, the Prime Minister, had a long conversation with General Gamelin, chief of the French armed forces. Monsieur Daladier also had an interview with the Minister of Labour. The government have advised those whose presence in Paris is not indispensable to leave, and the railways have made arrangements to help in the evacuation. A decree published today ordered the requisition of French factories and private firms to supply material to all the defense departments. Private vehicles have been requisitioned, and all holidays have been cancelled for workers engaged in national defense. Staff on holiday are being recalled. It is understood that commanding generals are being appointed for the French armies and army groups, and that they will take over their commands at once. Last night, there was a partial blackout of Paris, and many streets were in darkness. Everywhere today, there are signs of precautionary measures being pushed ahead. The people are quite calm and are going about their daily business as usual. The stations are crowded with reservists, people who are already leaving Paris, and British subjects who are returning home on the advice of the British Embassy. The staff of the German Embassy in Paris are being concentrated in the Embassy building. Various branches which were housed outside will move into the building today. German journalists began to leave Paris this morning. An official communique issued in Rome says that two more army classes are being called up as a precautionary measure. This will bring the total number of classes under arms to six, with some specialists of various classes. The communique adds that the Italian naval and air forces have had their effective numbers nearly complete since Wednesday, and that 35 battalions of the militia have been called to the colors. Herr Hitler's meeting with Herr von Ribbentrop, Field Marshal Goering, and the Commanders-in-Chief of the Army and Navy lasted from 7 o'clock until after midnight, and it is believed that other high officials of the armed forces were also present. Herr Hitler had returned to Berlin earlier in the day from Berchtesgaden. Today's reports from Berlin and Warsaw is still complaining of provocation from the other side. The German line is to declare that Polish military operations have taken on an offensive character. German reports try to give the impression that Poland is on the point of making a military coup. Thus, it is said that the whole of the Danzig frontier with Poland is surrounded by large concentrations of troops, said to amount to 4 divisions. On the other side of the frontier, Berlin claims that there are 20 German divisions. But this fact is not considered in relation to the Polish military preparations. Of the 20 divisions, 11 are said to be in East Prussia, and the other main points of concentration are on the Polish frontier opposite Vienna and near Breslau. In the west, all positions are fully manned in the Upper Rhineland district, and the German troops are working hard on new fortifications. Great activity is also reported along the frontiers of Belgium and Luxembourg, and on the southern end of the Siegfried Line near Baden. The German cruiser Schleswig-Holstein entered Danzig harbor this morning. According to German reports, the Danzig Senate has ordered that fuel supplies must be conserved, and consequently private motor traffic in Danzig has come to a standstill. A statement was issued in Warsaw last night about the appointment of Herr Forster as head of the Danzig state. It says that Poland will decide her attitude to this appointment when its real aims are made clear. It adds that Poland would not agree to any Anschluss of Danzig with Germany or to any step which might place Danzig outside the Polish customs frontier. All other Polish rights, it says, must also be preserved without any limitations. On the other hand, it reaffirms that Poland would not raise difficulties in the free cultural development of the German majority, provided Polish minority rights were safeguarded. In Germany, British and French residents have now been warned to leave, and the last British newspaperman in Berlin left late last night. In the British embassy, luggage is being packed and papers sorted out. Americans in England and France have also been warned by the consular authorities to leave at once. The United States liner President Roosevelt, which was due to leave Havre tonight for Hamburg, will not continue her journey. Because of the large number of Americans who are leaving Europe, she will sail back to New York on Saturday night. About 100 extra beds are being put on board her, lodging a protest with Germany against the German-Soviet pact. The Dome News Agency says that the cabinet decided on this step this morning and that the Japanese ambassador in Berlin, Mr. Oshima, has been instructed to lodge the protest. The spokesman of the Foreign Office said today in Tokyo that Article 4 of the German-Soviet pact was considered to violate the Anti-Comintern pact. He denied that Japan had been invited to join a non-aggression pact with the Soviet or an alliance against Britain. In reply to a question, he announced that the former war minister, Count Terauchi, and Baron Osumi would not now represent Japan at the Nazi Congress at Nuremberg on September the 2nd. Japanese newspapers this morning vigorously attacked Germany. The Yomiuri Shimbun declares that Germany's action admits of no excuse. And the Kokumin Shimbun, which formerly advocated a Japanese military alliance with Germany and Italy, declares that the Anti-Comintern Pact has become a dead letter. The members of the British and French military missions, who were to have left Moscow during the night and this morning, have postponed their departure. Officials gave no explanation and said that the missions might or might not leave today. It is officially announced that the Soviet Parliament is to hold an extraordinary session on Monday. President Roosevelt's messages to Herr Hitler and President Moschicki are in similar terms. He urges that Germany and Poland should agree to refrain from any positive act of hostility for a reasonable stipulated period. He also suggests that the differences between them should be solved by direct negotiation, by impartial arbitration, or through the procedure of conciliation with a citizen of one of the traditionally neutral states in Europe, or of one of the American republics as conciliator. President Roosevelt says it would be understood that on the adoption of any one of these courses, each nation would agree to respect the independence and territorial integrity of the other. In his message to Herr Hitler, the President points out that he has not yet received a reply to the message he sent Herr Hitler on April the 14th. He adds that because of his belief that world peace rises above all other considerations, he is again addressing himself to the Führer in the hope that the war which impends and the consequences to all peoples everywhere may yet be averted. The people of the United States, declares President Roosevelt, are as one in their opposition to the policies of military conquest and domination. They are as one in rejecting a thesis that any ruler or any people possess the right to achieve their ends or objectives through the taking of action which will plunge countless millions of people into war. The President's message to the King of Italy expresses the belief that King Victor Emmanuel and his government can do much to avert an outbreak of war. He recalls briefly his proposals of April last that no independent nation should be attacked and that a disarmament and trade conference should be held. He adds that any solution which the Italian government might put forward would have the earnest sympathy of the United States. King Victor Emmanuel has asked the American ambassador in Rome to thank President Roosevelt and to tell him that his message will be referred to the Italian government. The Pope broadcast an appeal for peace last night and invited all men to pray for it. He appealed to rulers to lay aside threats and arms and try to solve their differences by agreement. To the peoples, he appealed that they should encourage peaceful aims of their government. The Pope concluded, "It is with the force of reason and not with that of arms that justice advances. Conquest and empires which are not founded on justice are not blessed by God." The French, Polish, and Italian ambassadors and the British Chargé d'Affaires called last night at the office of the Papal Secretary of State. One report says that they were received by the Pope. The Australian Prime Minister, Mr. R.G. Menzies, said in a broadcast relayed throughout the Commonwealth today that in the event of war, Australia would stand by Britain. "We are involved," said Mr. Menzies, "because the destruction or defeat of Great Britain would be the destruction and defeat of the Empire and would leave us in precarious tenure of our own independence." He declared that defense preparations were complete and that everything conceivable had been done to preserve Australia against attack and to enable her to cooperate effectively with other British countries. The Australian government has stated to be working out plans to check exports and to control commodities. In New Zealand, all leave in the defence forces has been stopped. The acting Prime Minister, Mr. Fraser, told the New Zealand Parliament today that all necessary steps have been taken and that any information the public ought to have will be broadcast through all the national radio stations. In South Africa, the Defence Minister, Mr. Pierrot, has left Pretoria to see the Premier, General Herzog, who is still on his farm, but is expected to return to Pretoria tomorrow. It is believed that Mr. Pierrot will report on the latest developments and discuss the Union's position. Indian Army officers who were abroad on leave have been ordered to return, and overseas leave has been cancelled. Officers' leave in India has not yet been stopped. In Singapore, German residents have been advised by their consul general to leave, and today 23 of them went by sea and air to the Netherlands East Indies. A semi-official Netherlands news agency today reiterates the firm determination of the Netherlands to uphold her neutrality by all possible means, even in the air. The Belgian cabinet this morning decided on extra defense measures to put the whole of Belgium on an active defense footing. It has also decided to obtain 200,000 more gas masks. The Greek Prime Minister, General Metaxas, was received in audience at Athens today by the King. In a speech at a conference in Athens, General Metaxas said, "The Greek nation, while preparing itself from a military standpoint, is working towards a peaceful existence in the future." On the London and Paris stock exchanges this morning, business was a little brighter, and the general trend of prices was upward. In London, gilt-edged stocks remained at the minimum prices fixed yesterday, and home industrials showed some improvement. German and Austrian loans showed losses of a point on yesterday. On the foreign exchange market, there was a big fall in sterling to 4.37 because the control did not intervene. But the dollar rate has since recovered to 4.42 compared with last night's close of 4.68 1/8. The fall in sterling resulted in the price of gold rising to 150 shillings and sixpence per fine ounce in the London bullion market. This was an increase of 2 shillings and a penny on yesterday's quotation and is the highest figure recorded since last January. A Paris Bourse report says that the drop in the pound is thought to have been made in accordance with an agreement by the tripartite powers, and that it will probably be followed by the immediate export of large quantities of gold from England. Messages from Hong Kong today say that the families of British Army and Navy men are now going on board the cruise ship Etris. The United States Consul General in Hong Kong has advised all Americans who can to take their holidays now. It is expected that the United States liner President Cleveland will stay at Hong Kong until it is seen whether it is likely that Americans will be evacuated. It was learned here in London today that all British residents in Tientsin are safe. The floods have risen a further 3 inches within the last 24 hours, and as there are fears that they may be followed by epidemics, British, French, and Belgian women and children have been advised to leave the city. Now, here is a fuller summary of yesterday's speeches in the House of Commons. Mr. Chamberlain began by saying that since the House rose, the international position had steadily deteriorated, until today we found ourselves confronted with the imminent peril of war. Military preparations, he said, have been made in Germany on such a scale that country is now in a condition of complete readiness for war. At the beginning of this week, we had word that German troops were beginning to move towards the Polish frontier. It then became evident that a crisis of the first magnitude was approaching, and His Majesty's government resolved that the time had come when they must seek the approval of Parliament for further defense measures. Mr. Chamberlain spoke of the violent campaign by the German press against the Polish government, in the face of which, he said, Polish statesmen had shown their calm and self-restraint. The Polish statesmen, he went on, have always been ready, and I am sure they are ready now, to discuss differences with the German government, if they can be sure that those discussions will be carried on without threats of force or violence, and with some confidence that if agreement were reached, it would be respected afterwards, both in its terms and in its spirit. Mr. Chamberlain then dealt with the German-Soviet pact. I do not attempt to conceal from the House, he said, that announcement came to the government as a surprise of a very unpleasant character. He said no inkling of a change in German-Soviet relations had been conveyed either to the British or French governments by the Soviet government. To say the least, he said, it is highly disturbing to learn that while British, French, and Soviet conversations were proceeding on a basis of mutual trust, the Soviet was secretly negotiating a pact with Germany for a purpose, on the face of it, inconsistent with the object of their foreign policy as we understood it. I do not propose to pass any final judgment on this incident. It would be premature until we have had an opportunity of consulting with the French government as to the meaning and consequences of this agreement. Mr. Chamberlain said that in Berlin, the announcement of the Russo-German pact had been hailed as a great diplomatic victory, which removed the danger of war,
since it was said Britain and France would no longer be likely to fulfill their obligations to Poland.
We felt it our first duty, said the Prime Minister, to remove any such dangerous illusions.
Then, in order to leave no possible loophole for misunderstanding, and so that no doubt might exist in the minds of the German government, the British ambassador in Berlin had an interview with Herr Hitler and handed to him a message on behalf of the British government. Mr. Chamberlain said he made it plain in this message that if cause should arise, the British government were resolved and prepared to employ without delay all the forces at their command. On numerous occasions, Mr. Chamberlain added, I have stated my conviction that war between our two countries would be the greatest calamity. With this fact in mind, I informed the German Chancellor that in our view, there was nothing in the questions arising between Poland and Germany which could not and should not be resolved without the use of force, if only a situation of confidence could be restored. Herr Hitler's reply to this message, Mr. Chamberlain added, included what amounted to a restatement of the German thesis that Eastern Europe was a sphere in which Germany should have a free hand, and that if we or any country having less direct interest chose to interfere, the blame for an ensuing conflict would be ours. Mr. Chamberlain said this thesis entirely misapprehends the British position. We do not seek to claim a special position in Eastern Europe, or ask that Germany shall sacrifice national interests. But we cannot agree that national interests can only be secured by the shedding of blood or the destruction of other states. Mr. Chamberlain went on, the catastrophe has not yet come upon us, and we must still hope that reason and sanity may find a way to reassert themselves. He referred to the close contacts with the French government and said that the attitude of the Dominion and their sympathy with our patient efforts in the cause of peace were a source of profound encouragement to us. We want to see established, said Mr. Chamberlain, an international order based on confidence and trust, the observation of international undertakings once entered into, and the renunciation of force for the settlement of differences. If, despite all our efforts to find a peaceful solution, and God knows I have tried my best, we find ourselves forced to embark on a struggle which is bound to be fraught with suffering and misery to all mankind, and the end of which no man can foresee, we shall not be fighting for the political future of a faraway city in a foreign land, but for the preservation of those principles, the destruction of which would involve the destruction of all possibility of peace and security for the peoples of the world. The issue of peace or war does not rest with us. I trust that those with whom the responsibility does lie will think of the millions of human beings whose fate depends on their actions. For ourselves, we have a united country behind us, and in this critical hour, I believe we in this House of Commons will stand together, and we shall show the world that as we think, so we will act, as a united nation. The deputy leader of the opposition, Mr. Arthur Greenwood, said, we are not supporters of this government, but let no man abroad think that Labour will be a willing party to acquiesce in any further acts of aggression. The world must be made aware that in this attitude against aggression, British Labour is unshakable. Sir Archibald Sinclair said, let us give to the world today by speech and action an impressive and convincing demonstration that when vital interests of our country and moral values of civilized life and the peace of the world are menaced by force, the British Parliament and people stand firmly with the people of France.
Here at home, precautionary measures are being pushed ahead. Special planes have been put into commission today by Imperial Airways. They have been bringing back about 1,500 Britons from France. The Duke of Kent arrived at Croydon this afternoon by the passenger service. The Duchess is remaining in Yugoslavia for the time being. 3,000 Metropolitan Police pensioners have been recalled for duty tomorrow. They are the first reserve to be called up in an emergency and will serve in their old divisions. Cinemas in Britain will probably be closed at once for a short period if war breaks out. About 240 motor coaches have been converted into ambulances and are now available at London passenger transport garages. The Lord Privy Seal's office today issued advice to people with domestic pets. If possible, these should be sent into the country in advance of an emergency, otherwise they are to be taken into household shelters. But they must not be left behind by families who are being evacuated. The main roads out of London tonight are crowded with heavily laden cars, mostly carrying families with children. Many of them have a perambulator or a child's bicycle strapped onto the roof or luggage rack. All schools in evacuation areas are to be reopened tomorrow for a rehearsal of the evacuation procedure. Full practice exercises for the benefit of teachers and children will be held on Monday. Children who are away on holiday are not expected to return for them. Hospitals in evacuation areas have been sent certain preliminary instructions. The admission of patients is to be restricted, except for acute cases, and the extra beds already provided are to be set up. At present, no general movement of hospital staffs or patients has been ordered, and there's been no call on the emergency staff. The German newspapers are now writing of an imminent attack on Danzig by Poland. They describe Polish military preparations as being of an aggressive character and give great prominence to reports that the Polish government has not got control of the army. It is declared that the Polish army wants to march on its own initiative. A Polish attack is alleged on a German airliner carrying two high officials of the Ministry of the Interior. This is described as intolerable provocation. It is now claimed in Berlin that there are 20 German divisions on Poland's frontiers. 11 are said to be in East Prussia, and the other main points of concentration are opposite Gdynia and near Breslau. There is also great activity in the west. The German cruiser Schleswig-Holstein entered Danzig harbor this morning. According to German reports, the Danzig Senate has ordered that fuel supplies must be conserved, and consequently, private motor traffic in Danzig has come to a standstill. A statement was issued in Warsaw last night about the appointment of Herr Forster as head of the Danzig Senate. Of the Danzig State. It says that Poland will decide her attitude to this appointment when its real aims are made clear. It adds that Poland would not agree to any Anschluss of Danzig with Germany or to any step which might place Danzig outside the Polish customs frontier. All other Polish rights, it says, must also be preserved without any limitations. On the other hand, it reaffirms that Poland would not raise difficulties in the free cultural development of the German minority, provided Polish minority rights were safeguarded. So long as Poland's vital interests and rights are not affected, the Polish government considers the question of the internal system of government in Danzig as of secondary importance. The High Commissioner for Palestine, Sir Harold McMichael, returned to Jerusalem by air today. He left for Britain on August the 13th for a 2 months holiday. All police and civil service leave has been cancelled, and there is evidence of considerable military activity in the main garrison centers. Palestine's first blackout will be carried out in Haifa on Monday. In Geneva today, Dr. Weizmann, closing the 21st session of the World Zionist Organization, of which he is president, declared that Jews, despite their grievances, would stand by Britain in the event of war. Many speakers praised the sympathetic attitude of the British public towards Jewish refugees. All the delegates agreed on the need for a united front in opposing the White Paper policy for Palestine. a stirring call to India to support the democracies to the limit of her entire resources was made today by Sir Sikandar Hayat Khan, the Premier of the Punjab. He urges India to take up the challenge which he says the warlords of Europe have thrown at the peace-loving nations of the world. She will be serving not only her own interests, but those of other Muslim countries to whom independence and freedom are equally precious. Political reforms in India so far, he said, have been won by sacrifices in the last war, and India's future political destiny would depend on her attitude now. Sir Sikandar repeated the assurance given last September that the manpower and resources of the Punjab would be unhesitatingly and ungrudgingly placed at the disposal of Britain and her allies. We will rise, he said, as one man to fight the enemies of peace and freedom. Special measures were taken in London tonight to protect the Admiralty, Home Office, Ministry of Transport and War Office. This action was taken after Scotland Yard had discovered a new IRA plot to make a concerted attack on government buildings. Earlier in the day, five people were killed when a bomb exploded in the centre of Coventry. 12 people were detained in hospital and about 50 others were treated but not detained. This explosion is believed to be the work of IRA terrorists. It wrecked 3 shops and damaged trams, buses and private cars. It is believed that the bomb was placed in a tradesman's box tricycle left standing in the street. One woman and 2 men have been arrested. German vessels loading at British northeast coast ports today received instructions from their owners to return home not later than tomorrow. The French, Polish and Italian ambassadors and the British Chargé d'Affaires called last night at the office of the Papal Secretary of State. All Italians in Gibraltar, except for the consul and his staff, have been asked to quit. A message from Burgos says that the trend of Spanish policy, as indicated in the press, remains one of complete neutrality. There are no indications either of troop movements or of men being recalled to the colours. The press seems to think that the scales are weighed in favour of peace, and much is expected of Italy as a deciding factor. The Yugoslav government resigned this afternoon and will be reformed under the same Prime Minister, Monsieur Cvetkovic. This reshuffle is the result of an agreement which was reached yesterday with the Croat leader, Monsieur Maček. It is expected that the new government will include representatives of the Croat Peasant Party. In Budapest, the police have banned a demonstration by Hungarian Nazis outside the German and Italian legations on Sunday, which was to have celebrated the success of the Axis policy. A semi-official Netherlands news agency today reiterates the firm determination of the Netherlands to uphold her neutrality by all possible means, even in the air.
That is the end of the news.